Welcome to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community Radio Show. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG is committed to bringing awareness to organizations in our community. This show highlights local and surrounding area nonprofits to help listeners learn how they can have an impact in our community and is for educational purposes only. We believe that helping the community is always positive and recognize the importance of providing a voice. Every organization highlighted is a qualified 501c3. The opinions and missions expressed on MPC do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Welcome. This is EIG, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Good morning and welcome to Milwaukee's philanthropic community. MPC is a radio show whose purpose is to inform, inspire, and impact you, which will hopefully move you to the point of action. We'll be highlighting two people from two different nonprofit organizations today who are doing great things and making a big impact in our community. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations at Ellenbecker Investment Group. We've talked about workforce development topics and unemployment over the years on the show with a number of different nonprofits that work in that space. And it's been a very important topic of conversation as of late as well. We've had fewer conversations, however, about the labor force with specific populations of people. And so we're planning on doing a little bit more of that this year. One of those specific groups or populations of people we want to focus on are those with disabilities. The labor force participation rate for people with disabilities sits at about 32%, compared to just over 77% for those without disabilities. And many who support loved ones with disabilities or are themselves disabled want to emphasize that improving disability employment requires collaboration between government, local authorities, educators, career advisors, occupational health services, and employers. All of us helping to support disabled people across health, education, employment, and communities is essential to close the gap. My first guest today is Saul Newton, Executive Director from Disability Inn of Wisconsin, who serves as a collective voice to affect change for people with disabilities in business. Their network of over 500 corporations helps to expand opportunities for people with disabilities across enterprises. Welcome to the show today, Saul.
Thank you very much for having me, Jill.
You are welcome. So can you start by telling us more about Disability Inn of Wisconsin and why you wanted to be a part of their mission?
Absolutely. Disability Inn Wisconsin is a membership-based association of businesses across the state of Wisconsin committed to disability inclusion and accessibility in the workplace. Our members range from Fortune 500 companies to small businesses to community-based nonprofit organizations, all aligned with the same mission of expanding opportunities in the workforce and opportunities in the business world, generally speaking, for individuals with disabilities.
And then why did you want to be a part of the mission?
Well, I have a personal investment. I'm a combat disabled veteran. So, you know, as someone with that lived experience, I also, you know, certainly appreciate the challenges that individuals with disabilities face in gaining, you know, supportive employment and, you know, being allowed the opportunity to reach their full potential. And so I think when it comes to issues related to disabilities, there's always been a lot of focus on community organizations. There's always been a lot of focus on public policy. But historically, businesses haven't been as, the business community hasn't been as much a part of the conversation as maybe they should have been. And so this is really an opportunity to bring the business community to the table and be a part of you know, the collective effort.
Okay. Well, what inspired the establishment of Disability Inn of Wisconsin? And what are some of the key objectives that the organization aims to achieve?
Sure. Disability in Wisconsin was formed about 6 years ago when a collective representatives from six different Wisconsin-based companies came together and identified the need for an organization dedicated to working directly with businesses to help them understand how to make their workplaces more inclusive, more accessible, really put them in the position to leverage the talents and the skills and the expertise that individuals with disabilities bring to the workplace. And so from those humble beginnings, the organization has grown exponentially over the years. Now our statewide network of members, reaches all corners of the state. And we're really committed to, being that platform that allows businesses to learn from each other and to share best practices and to identify common challenges and to have that opportunity to compare amongst themselves and connect with others so that, the goal, everyone has the same goal at the end of the day, which is improving our workplaces and making them more inclusive and making them more accessible. We serve a really unique role in that objective, and that is, being that convener of businesses across the state.
Okay. Well, you obviously work with neurodiverse individuals, amongst others, obviously. So can you define for our audience today what you mean by neurodiverse? And then explain why it's important in the workplace.
Absolutely. Neurodiversity or neurodivergence boils down to differences in the ways that our brains operate. And individuals who are neurodivergent, their brains differ in the ways that they operate from someone who is quote unquote average or neurotypical, the way that their brains might operate. So that might take a couple of different forms. It could be in social preferences for an individual. It could be ways that they prefer to communicate. It could be ways that they prefer to learn. It could be ways that they interact with the environment that they're in. All of those things, factor into the ability of someone someone being in the workforce and being in the workplace and being provided the opportunity, the same opportunities to succeed and to contribute that others might have.
Okay. And so it goes without saying, it's important in the workplace for people to understand the different ways that people learn. I mean, that's across the board, I think. My son doesn't learn the same way that my daughter does. And so everybody learns differently. And it's just understanding that and trying to come up with a way that that works best for the individual, right?
Absolutely.
What would you say are some common misconceptions then about neurodiversity, and how can employers address them?
Sure. So there are, in the context of workforce and employment, there are some misconceptions about neurodiversity and neurodivergence. Some of those really boil down to just lack of knowledge or lack of awareness. One misconception is that neurodiversity is a blanket label and that everyone who is neurodivergent or neurodiverse has the same challenges when the form of neurodivergence really does kind of dictate, differences. So someone who might be on the autism spectrum might have different challenges than someone who, say, has ADHD or is dyslexic. So there are differences amongst the different types of neurodivergence. A big misconception amongst employers is that neurodivergent individuals can't function in the workplace or can't be successful. That is certainly not the case. Some of the world's most, recognizable and successful executives are neurodivergent. Richard Branson, the founder of Virgin Airlines, is dyslexic and has talked at length about how living with dyslexia has not only been something that he has had to deal with, but has actually been an asset to him and given him skills that has made him more successful. There is a misconception that neurodivergence is the same thing as mental health, which there are very specific differences between neurodivergence and mental health conditions. And I think most probably the biggest misconception is just the prevalence and how many people in our workforce are neurodivergent, whether they identify as such or not. Some estimates identify up to 1 in 5 individuals in the, 1 in 5 adults are some form of neurodivergent. And so I think there's employers would probably be very surprised at how many of the individuals they currently have in their organizations who are neurodivergent, who just maybe haven't identified as such.
So unfortunately, there's misconceptions, like you talked about neurodiversity. How can employers then address those things, and how can they benefit from embracing neurodiversity in the workforce?
I think it comes down to awareness and education, starting with leadership and really permeating throughout the organization, educating teams about what neurodivergence is, what neurodiversity is, and recognizing again the fact that not only are these individuals, very prevalent in the workforce, but they bring skills and expertise and experiences that improve teams and make businesses better. You know, the skills that neurodivergent individuals bring have been identified as skills that are desperately needed in the workforce. Innovative thinking, analytical thinking, attention to detail, focus on productivity. Reliability and trustworthiness. All of these are things that employers have said are skills that they are that they desperately need in the workforce. And here you have individuals who, with these conditions, have specific expertise and specific skills that meet the need. I also think it comes down to recognizing that teams with diverse skill sets and different lived experiences all perform better. If you have if you have teams who all have the same skill set, who all have the same experiences, there's going to be blind spots. There's going to be gaps in how that team can perform. Whereas if you bring together a diverse team that has complementary skill sets and brings different perspectives to the table across the board, they perform better.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I imagine that there are specific challenges that neurodivergent individuals face when they're in the workplace. We're going to take a quick break here, but when we return, Saul is going to share how employers can provide support, as well as some practical strategies employers can use to create a more inclusive environment. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to EIG, Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Jill Economo, and I'm talking with Saul Newton, Executive Director from Disability Inn of Wisconsin. So, Saul, I imagine there are some specific challenges that neurodivergent individuals often face in the workplace. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, there are certainly challenges that neurodivergent individuals face, first in the in the job search and application process, but then also once they're in the workforce and so in the interview process, again, what neurodivergence really deals with is how brains operate differently and how in certain circumstances folks might present or interact with those around them differently. And so in some cases, an interview or different types of interviews can really be setting individuals up for failure and putting them in a place where they're not able to really showcase the skills and the expertise that they bring to the table, whether that's, through a screening process, whether that's through an interview or what have you. Once you get into the workplace, though, there are also challenges that neurodivergent individuals face in just being able to bring their best selves to work and operate and perform at the highest level. A lot of that comes down to a concept called masking. And what that really means is expending energy to just function in an environment that is not conducive to your needs, rather than focusing that energy on performing and operating at your highest level. And so, if someone, say, is overstimulated by their environment, the energy that they have to put into simply being able to function in that environment rather than perform a task or perform a job, takes away from that. As I mentioned, there's challenges in interactions with people in the workplace, with environments, environmental stimulation. There's also challenges in opportunities for advancement, in providing professional development opportunities and career development. All of those things boil down to, again, lack of awareness, lack of education, and just being willing to put people in a position where they can be successful and where they can operate, where they're able to operate at their highest level.
Well, thanks for sharing that, because I think it's important for employers to understand the challenges that neurodivergent individuals may go through. And so understanding that is only going to be a benefit. What about practical strategies then that employers can use to create a more inclusive environment?
Sure. I know that I've mentioned this before, the biggest thing is education and awareness. And so employers offering training and providing training to their HR teams, to their recruiters, to their hiring managers, to managers within the organization, all of that is critical to being able to address some of these challenges and really tap into this extraordinary talent pool that's out there. There's also the topic of accommodations in the workplace, and I think sometimes employers get intimidated by that, but especially when we're dealing with neurodivergent individuals, accommodations that might be needed for someone to perform at their highest level, a lot of times these are very simple, low cost or no cost, just an employer being willing to be flexible and provide someone with what they need in order to perform. Having policies and procedures in place around how to request accommodations, what accommodations are available. Not only that, but also developing a culture where someone feels comfortable asking for those accommodations. That's a major thing that employers can do.
Okay. Well, what about the hiring process? Before they even get to the workplace, how can companies ensure that their hiring process is inclusive and accessible to neurodiverse candidates?
I think the same, when it comes to accommodations, the same concept applies. Having a process, as part of the application process, asking about what accommodations a candidate might need in the interview process, if they need questions ahead of time, or if there's certain environments that, would not be conducive for them. Just having the opportunity to provide that input and say, is there anything that you need from us in order to, present yourself the best way during this interview? The training of HR professionals and recruiters is very important. But I also think that employers need to review their interview process, their policies, their interview practices to make sure that they're being inclusive and accessible and not arbitrarily excluding qualified candidates for very, easily avoidable mistakes. And I think that employers, the more that they can focus on assessing candidates for their skills and their capability rather than, more arbitrary screening methods, I guess, that really allows employers to look at, all right, what does this candidate bring to the table that can benefit our organization?
Okay. And then what advice? Let's say there's an employer who is considering implementing neurodiversity initiatives, but they're unsure where to start. What advice would you give them?
I think the first is to be strategic and to identify critical roles within their organizations and where someone with a neurodivergent background would really be an asset. Identify the business case and the value that these individuals bring to the businesses or to their businesses, I should say. And lastly, to leverage resources that exist, certainly Disability in Wisconsin and other disability service providers can provide a lot of support to employers who are willing to make this commitment and willing to develop opportunities for neurodivergent individuals in their workplaces.
Okay. Well, let's say someone is listening and they want to learn more. Can you tell us about some initiatives that that you're focusing on that promote neurodiversity in the workplace that they can listen to?
Sure. Disability in Wisconsin offers programming throughout the year focused on neurodiversity and neurodivergence. We have dedicated webinars that focus on different sectors and how neurodivergence can really be beneficial in those sectors. We're focusing on healthcare and manufacturing, technology, finance. We also host in-person programming, educational programming throughout the year. So anyone who's interested in learning more about our programming can go to disabilityinwisconsin.org to see all of our upcoming events and programs that they can participate in.
Okay, great. Well, if I asked you what your call to action would be, Saul, that you'd like to share with our audience today, what would that be?
That would be for anyone who is in a position to hire people, employers, to really look at their hiring practices and their employment practices and to evaluate whether they are being inclusive and making their organizations accessible to qualified, capable candidates who bring a lot to the table, who they might be missing out on. And so just starting from there and looking and seeing, are we missing out on opportunities that we're not even aware of yet?
Okay, wonderful. Well, one more time before we let you go here, contact information so people know how to get a hold of you or the organization, website information, all that good stuff.
Absolutely. All of that is listed on our website, disabilityinwisconsin.org.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you, Saul. Appreciate you sharing your insight, your knowledge, your wisdom in this area. Thank you for participating today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So Disability Inn talks about fostering growth and awareness in business for people with disabilities. Now we're going to dial down even further, and we're going to focus in our last half of the show on a specific population. So stay tuned to learn more after commercial break. We'll be right back.
Thanks for tuning in. This is EIG, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, with your host, Julie Conimo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back to Milwaukee's philanthropic community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations. And my next guest in this last half of the show is Denise Shamans, Executive Director and co-founder of Good Friend, Inc. Welcome to the show yet again, Denise.
Thank you, Jill. I know, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, we wanted to make sure that we brought you in because April is Autism Awareness Month. And so we just want to make sure that during this month of April, people have an opportunity to hear what you're all about. So I shared the stat at the opening of the show that the labor force participation rate for people with disabilities is at about 32%. And you shared with me that about 80% of neurodivergent people are under or unemployed, and that only about 14% of adults with autism in the United States work for pay. I bet that frustrates and quite possibly infuriates you. And you probably want to do something to change those stats. So it's been said that what you do in your life is only ever as good as why you do it. So tell us your story and why you do what you do.
Absolutely. My why has always been the driving force of this organization. It's I'm a mom first and foremost. I have three, actually all neurodivergent children who are now young adults. And they have kind of paved the way. I have two boys and a girl, and my middle son, Sam, is autistic. And my other two, my son and daughter, are both ADHD. So it's been a journey trying to figure out, you know, first and foremost, we started with Sam and trying to figure out how to support him. He is now 25 and he is successfully employed, I will say, not full time, but he is in supported employment. And so, you know, we started this journey because of my son. And Really didn't have anyone else identified in our family that was autistic, so really had to figure this out as we went along. And so that's really where my passion lies, is now that I see my son employed, and I also see the barriers to full-time employment for him, and knowing so many of his peers are in the same position or unemployed and not doing anything. And then when you juxtapose that against everyone wanting to hire, it just doesn't add up. So,
right. Yeah. That's, again, that's gotta be so frustrating when you hear those stats.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us what Good Friend Inc.'s origin story is, and, you know, what's your mission?
Yes. So Good Friend Inc. started in 2007. So we're approaching our end of our 17th year. My co-founding business partner, Chelsea Booty, and I, both parents of neurodivergent children at the time, felt it was really necessary to get into the schools and start teaching the peers. What we were doing, we both were doing when our kids were in first and second grade, is we'd go into their classroom, sit down with their classmates and explain our son or daughter's autism. And we knew that we could reach 20 to 30 kids every time we sat down. So we're like, okay, we've got to make this bigger and better. And so we knew video was going to be our platform. And that was 17 years ago, and video is still king. So we use video. We started our first documentary in elementary school using our kids, their teachers, their peers. And within 3 months of conception, we were in the schools delivering this curriculum. So as we went along, we would go to conferences, we'd be in the schools and in the community, and we were asked, what about middle school? It's brutal. What do you have? And we weren't living it yet. Our kids weren't there yet. So every time we entered a new transition in our personal lives, then we knew that we could give it the respect that it needed. So once my son hit middle school, he was the oldest of our three, and we just developed a middle school curriculum and a film as well. So we've always had a film, which is a short 20 minutes, and then we have a whole curriculum of discussion and empathy building exercises that surround that, so we can do an hour service that way. So since then, we've redone both of those films. So we've done 4 short documentaries in the education space. And then we're going to talk about what's next, our next transition, because now our young adults are trying to be employed.
Well, so you have quite an array of programs. So share with the audience, again, just to kind of put it in perspective here, the different ways that you are making an impact through your offerings, through your programs online and in person. A little bit more about that.
Okay. Well, our programs have originated in the classroom. And so we started with all school assemblies, staff and services, individualized workshops. And that's where our space was for quite a few years. Until COVID hit and we were not in the classrooms anymore and could not deliver these services in person. And it forced us to pivot. It forced us to look at another way to reach the peers. And so we started developing our services that we do in person online. And so now that is called Good Friend Academy. That's our education platform. It's hosted through Learn Worlds on our website. And now anyone, any educator anywhere can access that curriculum. It's exactly what we do in person. The only thing is we don't have our personal stories, but educators have their own personal stories. They have their own examples of class of their scholars that have come and gone. So that's our offering in the education space, and that is in person as well as online. We are focusing now on the online initiative because that's nationwide. So we can offer that everywhere.
And, you know, once COVID hit, I think everybody had to pivot and try and find a new normal. And so students weren't even in school. So you had to figure out how are we going to reach these students? And so that was a great move. I think you had to do that. But so we like to have our nonprofits share their POP or their proof of performance or impact stories to help us understand really, how do you know that what you're doing is actually working?
It's such a great question, and it's also a difficult one for us as an organization because we don't, what makes us unique is we do not directly impact those autistic students. What our services do is change hearts and minds in the community. It changes everybody else around that individual. And so we're there to educate strength-based, helping them see that we are different, but we're also very much alike. And once we have an understanding of each other, you're gonna see change. So 65,000 students later, in all of these years and all of these films, we've heard ally groups being formed, we've heard friendships being formed, we've heard autistic students actually now advocating for themselves because they have a positive strength-based platform to talk about since we've been there. And so it is hard to measure other than the number of students and the number of schools that we've been in. But I think it's changing hearts and minds is like everywhere, right? So it goes everywhere. Everyone has an opportunity to be empathetic about differences.
And I think your proof there is that, you know, you look at how much more attention is given to neurodivergence. And that is a win right there because people weren't talking about it before. Now they're talking right. about it because people are becoming educated and they understand they're no different than anybody else, you know?
Right. Well, and this month is a perfect example. It started as Autism Awareness Month, and now they're lobbying to try to change it to Autism Acceptance Month because everybody's pretty much aware of autism, you know? And if you're not, where have you been, right? So it's like we are now changing that language to being, you should know about this and you should understand it, this non-apparent, you know, condition. And let's support, let's accept. So,
And keep growing and moving in a positive direction.
Right.
Well, you've got quite a nice array of offerings, both online and in person, and you're making quite an impact in the community, as we talked about. But you have some new and exciting things going on that you want to be sure to draw attention to. And we're going to find out what those exciting things are after a commercial break. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to EIG, Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations, and I'm talking with Denise Shamans, Executive Director and co-founder of Good Friend Inc. So you've got some new and exciting things going on now and things that are coming down the pike here. So tell us about it.
Yeah, it's so exciting. So I did tell you that my son now is a young adult and is employed. So that is our next transition space. Now, Good Friend as an organization is moving into the employment space. We've looked at that for quite a few years and really wanted to make sure that we weren't recreating the wheel. We weren't, you know, trying. There are other people in the space that are doing great things. And so we want to be a connector. We want to be a catalyst. We want to shine light on these other organizations that are supporting employment, right? So we we're sticking true to our roots and what we've always done well. And that's educating through film and empathy and discussion, empathy building exercises and discussion. So we have created a training that is now launched. It is live and it's called Neurodiversity at Work. It is a online training that we are now offering to any business, any group for that matter. It consists of a film, a short film, documentary style that's 37 minutes long. And then we have five supporting modules that dive deeper and have subject matter experts as well as the film candidates. So the film candidates are 10 neurodivergent, successfully employed individuals that are in various industry. And it's been an amazing journey. It's been about a 2-year initiative for us to plan this and make sure we're doing it the right way. So our Neurodiversity at Work is now live on our employer tab on our website.
Well, and you talked about in the last segment these films that you're doing, which is really exciting, a great way to get great information into the hands of teachers and businesses and whatnot. How did you find the film candidates?
That was really an interesting experiment, really. I put it out on LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. I connect a lot. I have a lot of connections on LinkedIn. So that's where I started for our call. We did a call and we asked individuals to come forward, and the 10 that came forward were amazing. I didn't not use anyone. They were all absolutely incredible. They have a story, each of them, and a journey that deserves its own film. Each of them, really. If I had the funding, I would do a documentary on every one of them because they're amazing what they've done. And the really great thing is they were not asked by their employer to come forward to represent their successfully being employed. They came on their own. They stepped up. They knew that they had something to share. And it's pretty personal. You know, they're sharing their stories of struggle and triumph, and they make it. They just make it so much more powerful. That's the beauty of film and video, is people connect when they get to know you. And that's what this film does.
And I bet it was really fun for them too. You know, something maybe they would not have had the opportunity to do otherwise. And so, yeah, thanks for providing that opportunity. I think that's great. Well, we talk all the time about how collaboration is so important and how not one nonprofit can do it all. And when you come together and collaborate, you really are so much better together than you would have been individually. How has collaborating with Saul and Disability Inn of Wisconsin, how's that been going?
Yeah, Disability in Wisconsin has been, life-changing, really, for this program. When we started the talks with them, we knew that we had this idea and we had done all the year-long legwork to get it all set. And we started talking with DIW, and they were on board. Like, they got it. They understood it. And I love that what they do is such on a broad level, but what they're doing is highlighting other organizations that are doing just like we are and have different offerings. And so they're a collective. They're helping us. They're supporting us. And that was huge for us because it catapulted us into this position we're in now, probably a year before we would have been able to. And timing is everything. You know, this neurodiversity in the workspace is really hot topic right now, as far as the neurodiverse space in the DEI initiative is hot. And so the timing of this couldn't be any better. And so Disability in Wisconsin's collaboration with us has been just a really great partnership and has helped us immensely.
Well, thanks for that great example. You know, if somebody's listening and they're saying, you know, our reach is just not where we hoped it would be, think about collaborating with somebody that can extend your reach, or you guys can just work together to provide a greater experience or offering for a particular population. So mm-hmm. I'm happy to hear that collaboration is working so well. So I asked Saul this question. I'm going to ask it to you too. At the end of the segments, we ask for a call to action. What would you say your call to action would be for Good Friend Inc.?
Yeah, I think it's helping us get into this employment space. We're a small but mighty local organization. And, you know, promotion is always the hardest part, you know, getting people to hear about you and take a chance and look into your programming. So it's sharing that. We have many opportunities on our website to do in-person as well, if they just want to take the training and share it. I mean, it's for any size industry, any size business, from mom and pop to thousands, right? So, and it's for every level. It's C-suite, it's hiring managers, it's supervisors, it's HR, and it's coworkers. So we just need help getting the word out. We need help, have people look at our website. The trailers are there. Everything's there to explain. The learning objectives are there. So we just need exposure.
Well, I'm happy that we were able to help you with that.
Yeah.
I've known you for years. I know it's a great organization. I'm just happy that we were able to help you to get the word out of the great work that you and DIW do. So before you leave, Denise, can you give us contact information once again? What's the best way for somebody to get through to you guys?
Yeah, well, our website is www.goodfriendinc.org or .com. It's important to not put an S on friends, so it's goodfriendinc.com. And then my personal email is denise@goodfriendinc.com. So anyone can reach out. I'm more than happy to talk about the program and see how we can collaborate.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks for being here today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, I want to thank both my guests today, Denise Shamans, Executive Director and Co-Founder of Good Friend Inc., and Saul Newton, Executive Director from Disability Inn, Wisconsin. Thank you both for all the work that you do and for sharing how you're making a difference in the disability community and for letting us know how others can do the same. If you'd like further information about what we talked about today, you can reach out directly to Saul at Disability Inn of Wisconsin or Denise at Good Friend Inc., and they can make sure you get connected to the right place. If you know of a great organization that's doing great work in our community, like our guests today, that you think would be a great guest for the show, or if there's a particular topic that you'd like to learn more about, you can email me at jill@ellenbecker.com and you can share your thoughts. Tune in Sunday mornings at 10 to Milwaukee's philanthropic community to learn more about the ways people and organizations are making a difference in our community in a number of different ways. You can tune in to News Talk 1130 on your radio or on your computer or on your cell phone using the iHeartRadio app. You can also visit our website at ellenbecker.com to listen to previously aired interviews, and you can now listen on demand. So if you have a goal to live a life of purpose, think about how you want to do that. Our guests have shared today many ways that you can make a difference and have a significant impact, whether that's by donating, volunteering, advocating for their respective organization, or any organization we interview that speaks to your heart. We know that we can't do it all, but we can all do something. It was Picasso who once said, "The meaning of life is to find your gift. The purpose of life is to give it away." So figure out how you want to live a life of purpose. And when you do that, you'll have found a way to be a blessing and give a blessing. Thanks for listening today, and have a great day.